Today we're back with neuroscientist and synthetic organic chemist and biochemist, Dr. Dayan Goodenow. His book, Breaking Alzheimer's, brings the conversation of health back to our biochemistry. Part one was last week, and we conclude today. I'm Robin with Tributaries. Now, Dan,
it takes pennies to fix some of this stuff.
Are you finding across the absolute board a diagnosis of Alzheimer's shows low plasmalogen count?
Oh, absolutely. And that we've published that extensively. And the book Breaking Alzheimer's goes through large clinical trial data sets, like 1,262 people in Chicago. We tracked over 6 years. We had samples at time point one, time point two. We looked at people who had no dementia to begin with. We tracked them for 6 years to understand when certain people get dementia over that window of time that did not have dementia when they started. We asked what was different about them versus the people who stayed normal. And not only for cognition, but all-cause mortality. A 95-year-old with high plasmalogens has the same five-year lifespan. They have the same chance of living to their 100th birthday as a 65-year-old with low plasmalogens has of living to their 70th birthday. And that's what I was saying earlier. It's really not worth the risk of having low plasmalogens. It's just not worth it. The brain has different neurotransmitters for different purposes, right? So acetylcholine is the neurotransmitter. That's that molecule that goes across the synaptic cleft that is most involved in cognition. But all the muscles of your body, they're actually the same way. But instead of one neuron connecting to another neuron, what happens in your brain, in all your muscles, it's a neuron that connects to your muscle. And that's called a neuromuscular junction. And it works the same way that the synapses in your brain do. And your neuromuscular junction, the neurotransmitter, is acetylcholine. It's the same neurotransmitter that's responsible for reduced cognition in Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease has a significant component of muscle wasting. So people may have heard of sarcopenia or muscle wasting. The sit-stand improvement in the trial is actually reduction in sarcopenia. Okay, what we showed was reduced muscle wasting and actual muscle growth, because that's where the strength came in.
Right.
I'm 52 years old. I've always been a kind of a moderate athlete. I'm on again, off again. I'll work out for a year or two and then I'll stop working out. And then I've done this all my life. And I know getting back into shape is always a challenge. But for me personally, the plasmalogens, I didn't expect much to happen because I thought I was healthy to begin with. And obviously we do this research and I have my whole family on it. And my dad is in his 80s. And so I certainly was going to make sure I was taking it for a while to make sure everything was kosher. First thing I noticed personally was my eyesight. I wear progressives. I've always been nearsighted, so I've used glasses to drive. But I noticed, you know, in my late 40s, I started needing, you know, progressives for looking at things close to me. And I spent a lot of time on a computer because I do science. And I get headaches because I'd be on the computer all day long and I'd come home and I have this fuzzy head. So I started getting plasmalgia. I didn't really notice it at first. My eyes started getting blurry. Couldn't see things. And I thought something was going wrong. And it turned out that when I took my glasses off, I could see again. So my short-term vision really came back. I can't use glasses for anything within a four-foot radius. And my ability to visually see really small things has become much, much better. And I just can't remember the last time I ever had a headache from computer eye strain. And then strength-wise, there's little things that just kind of creep up on you.
Yes.
I don't have any muscle pain anymore when I work out. I'll do 50 push-ups. I'll rest for a few minutes. I do a second rep of 50 push-ups, and it's the same as the first one. It's like I haven't had any decline in strength. And I've done this enough in my life to know this is not the same. Alzheimer's disease is the canary in the coal mine, okay? It's one of those things that if you put a common stressor on a whole bunch of people, some people get Parkinson's, some people get anxiety or MS or Alzheimer's, but Alzheimer's is kind of the canary in the coal mine. It's the first one you see because this cholinergic neuron is the most sensitive to a plasmalogen defect versus other neurons. But it doesn't mean the other neurons aren't being affected. It just means that they're being slightly less affected in overall people. But when you improve neurological function, it's going to improve it on other systems as well. And that's where our genetic diversity and our life history give us our uniqueness. So you can take the same pressure on a group of people, and you're going to get different diseases from that population, because each person within that population will have a slightly different genetic predisposition.
Exactly, yes.
And they'll have a slightly different life history.
Yeah, I find it similar hearing you speak. Dr. Otto Warburg, you're probably familiar with him.
Yes.
And his work. And he said, you can come at me from here until the end of time with this causes cancer or that causes cancer. But basically, if you don't have enough oxygen at the cellular level, something's going to go wrong and very well could be cancer. And so I'm sure there's a relationship there with the plasmologens. Have you found anything in relation to either ATP production or the amount of oxygen at a cellular level? Or
that's a really good question. And bringing up Otto Warburg, that's excellent. That's a good story, because the biochemistry of cancer, the work in the 70s and 80s were really well done on the biochemistry of it. And so, yeah, cancer is at one of those strange diseases. Plasmalogens are defective in virtually all cancers. And we're just going to be releasing a paper, a large study in breast cancer out of Kyoto, Japan, where we looked at two different cohorts of women with breast cancer and one cohort before and after surgical removal of the breast tumors. And the plasmalogens are definitely low in all persons with breast cancer. Plasmalogen deficiency creates disruptions in your cholesterol regulation. Okay, so there's a genetic risk for Alzheimer's for people who have ApoE genotype epsilon 4. So ApoE is a lipoprotein. It's a molecule that your body uses to transport cholesterol around. You're basically made of water, and you have to move molecules that are not soluble in water from your liver to your toe, basically. And how your body moves things around like that is they attach these fatty pieces of fat, which is like cholesterol, which would normally just float on the top of water. And if you try to run that through your pipes of your house, it would all stick along the edges of your pipe and you would never get it anywhere. So the way the body can move these pieces of fat around is they have proteins called lipoproteins, and they're very, very soluble, and they're basically shuttles. So the fat will stick to the lipoprotein, and the lipoprotein will then move around in the water and get from point A to point B. So apolipoprotein E is one of those types of proteins that do that. And it's unique because it's almost the exclusive protein that your brain uses. Your blood uses ApoB for LDL and then ApoA for HDL. There's a variety of things that we use. But anyways, people who have a genotype with the epsilon 4, that mutation, it's called a SNP or a single nucleotide polymorphism, people may have heard of, it changes just an amino acid from a cysteine, which is like a sulfur containing, to arginine. Cysteine is, it creates these disulfide bridges. And the best way you can think about them is it's like a green door with two magnets. One side has a magnet and the other side has a magnet, and they stick together and you pull them apart and stick them together. And so basically that is a screen door dimer, if you will, right? And the magnet that does that in the human body for these proteins is a amino acid called cysteine. And so you need a cysteine on two different proteins to have those magnets stick together. Now, people with an ApoE4, they don't have a cysteine, they have an arginine. So it's like having a screen door where one half has a magnet and the other half doesn't. So of course it doesn't stick, right?
Right.
And so that's what happens with the ApoE4 genotype. And that single little mutation affects the ability of your cells to export cholesterol out of it. So it's the regulation of cholesterol in and out. Plasmalogens are important for cholesterol regulation. So the DHA plasmalogen, the one that's in Prodrome Neuro, it's critically important for reverse cholesterol transport. So people may have heard of your HDL transport system and so on. Plasmalogens are really critical for your cell's ability to regulate cholesterol. And cholesterol regulation is one of the critical components of cancer. All cancer cells have a cholesterol regulation defect. And they have an energetic defect, as you mentioned as well, in terms of their oxygen utilization and their glucose utilization. Again, the biochemistry of cancer is another one of those backward things. A good way of thinking about it is like one of the really strong cancer genotypes is the BRCA gene in breast cancer. And so women who have a BRCA gene have a higher susceptibility for breast cancer or for ovarian cancer. Now, it's important for people who have genetic risk factors to realize that genetic risk factors have no real effect on your lifespan or mortality. What they do is they affect your ability to get a disease. And then the disease has negative consequences. So the survival rate of women with breast cancer is the same whether or not you have a BRCA genotype or not. The BRCA genotype does not change your ability to survive breast cancer. It just increases your risk of getting breast cancer. Same thing with the APOE4 genotype for Alzheimer's. The genotype affects your risk of getting Alzheimer's. It doesn't change how Alzheimer's affects you.
That's such an important piece of information because that second part doesn't come out usually, right?
Well, no, because scientists get so focused on the shiny penny and they spend most of their world talking to each other. And that's where we get back to this disease as a symptom versus disease as the end. It's
Right. And so, also the shiny penny piece is like someone listening or I or you could be feeling like, oh my God, this is it. You know, we found the plasmalogen and that's it. We just take this and we'll be healthy. And yet we all kind of know better.
Yeah. Like I tell people, like I do the simplest work possible. My job is to do the basic tune-up of the human body. And there's two real things that you want to make sure work properly. One is your energy oxygen utilization, like you just mentioned, okay? Because all oxidative stress in the body comes from your mitochondria. The body is electrochemical. It's like a battery, right? You don't want to spill battery acid on yourself. The same thing is inside your body. And you're basically literally on fire, and your body keeps you from blowing up every day. We're making fire or converting hydrocarbons into carbon dioxide and water. So you breathe in through your lungs, you breathe in molecular oxygen. And so your lungs are a gas exchanger. We bring in oxygen and we breathe out carbon dioxide. And so in your car engine, when you burn octane, okay, or fuel, it's a chemical reaction. It goes boom. Like you get this gas formation and it runs our pistons, right, in the car engine. And you get gaseous water and gaseous carbon dioxide instantly. So a little bit of water that's dripping out of your tailpipe, that's the water part of that boom. And so we breathe in oxygen, we breathe out carbon dioxide, and then we convert that oxygen into water and we pee the water out. Okay, so that's how the human body works like a car engine. And it breaks it into two parts. The first part, it creates the carbon dioxide using it's called the Krebs cycle or the citric acid cycle. And that energy then is stored in high energy electrons. And this is the first law of thermodynamics. Like we can't create matter and we can't destroy matter. We just move it around. Okay. It's a biochemical shell game. And so something has to move to something else. So everything is always in balance. Whether or not you like the balance that you have, it's going to always add up. Like no matter what happens, the ledgers will always balance. Okay.
Right.
And our job is just to make sure they balance in the way we want them to balance. So you create these high energy electrons. And these high energy electrons are what charge the battery. Okay, so these go into the electron transport chain of the mitochondria. Basically, it's a battery charger. It moves protons into a proton gradient. The same way that your car battery has an electron gradient and it eventually gets depleted and then you plug it in and charge it overnight, right? So every single cell of your body does the same thing. But these high energy electrons is like the electricity. You can't store electricity when you turn your light switch on. You can store it in a battery for a certain period of time, but electricity is really not a storable quantity, which makes it challenging technologically in our world. NADH is that electrical energy in the human body. And so it has to get used. There's no way around it. And right. So if your electron transport chain can't neutralize the energy coming from your hydrocarbon burning part, it gets overloaded. And these electrons have to go someplace. They can't just disappear. And so these electrons get spud out into what's called oxidative stress. And the first one is called superoxide radical. And then your body has a bunch of little backup plans because obviously this is natural. Like if you start working out, if you have to run quickly, your body goes, oh my goodness, I wasn't expecting to have to sprint down the hallway today. And so all of a sudden you have used up more energy than you were expecting. So you're going to have some stress and then you're going to get adjustments. That's very natural. So you get this electron burst. Gets superoxide radicals, and then your body has enzymes called superoxide dismutase that neutralizes them to peroxides. And then you have other enzymes that reduce those peroxides down, like called catalase and your glutathione system. And plasmalogens are one of those that also neutralizes peroxides. Again, that's a natural system. So you have two backup plans. But if that second backup plan
is missing,
then what happens is that peroxide reacts with the membranes of your body. And that is where inflammation begins and ends, right there. I tell people your cells of your body are like your neighborhood. You don't really know what's going on in your neighbor's house until a chair comes flying out a window and lands on your front lawn. And all of a sudden you go, oh my goodness, something's gone over there. And all of a sudden then, now you got this broken window and you have a chair on the front lawn, and all of a sudden the police are coming by to figure out what's going on over there.
And, very good analogy.
That's what your immune system's like. And that's what oxidative stress does. Autoimmune diseases like MS, autism, inflammatory bowel syndrome, these are diseases where that inflammation perpetuates itself. Plasmalogens actually reduce that. And so when you're talking about MS and things, plasmalogens physically neutralize these aldehydes. So it's another really critical component of the plasmalogen. When we did this trial that we presented the data last week, malondialdehyde levels, which is a measure of lipid oxidation, those levels dramatically dropped. Catalase levels increased because we reduced the stress on the catalase system. And superoxide dismutase improved. All that data I have on video is on my website, so you can look it up. I walk you through the clinical data. I walk you through the biochemical data. Really, it's an Alice in Wonderland rabbit hole. Like, as deep as you want to get into understanding biochemistry, I'm happy to go there. I love that stuff, right?
I can tell.
It makes sense. There's a logic to it.
This is sort of a double question. Are plasmogens widely available? Do you need or do you recommend taking them, always getting tested first? How does all of that work?
Number one, yes, they're widely available. That's one of the things that I made sure of. Originally, I patented different plasmalogen precursor structures, and I was dealing with the whole pharmaceutical FDA pathway. But as I realized that these plasmalogen molecules were involved in multiple diseases and prevention of diseases, then I moved towards creating a 100% natural molecule that does not require a prescription. It does not require a linkage to a disease state.
So, and do you recommend getting a test first or not necessary?
So testing, obviously I recommend the testing because it tells people, it's not just plasmalogens. If there's other issues like your homocysteine, your methyltransferase system, mitochondrial function, basically a biochemical checkup, if you will. Plasmalogens are part of that blood test and they're a critical part, but we also measure a bunch of other things just to make sure that you don't have any unknown thing lurking that you have no way of knowing, right? Like I said, the phosphatidylcholine deficiency is a good one. There's no way knowing that you have that deficiency. And if you do, you can fix it very quickly. So I do recommend doing it. It's not absolute. Like if you have someone that you know, yourself or a loved one that has neurological issues, just go ahead and start taking it. And we have certain protocols that will help. So our blood test isn't a diagnostic test. So it's very important for everyone to understand that we're not in the business of medicine anymore. Okay, we're in the business of helping people understand their health. So the blood test is not designed to diagnose a disease. It's designed for you and me and your doctor, if you want. We have lots of physicians, to understand your biochemical health. And is there anything abnormal in that so that you will fix it. The plasmalogen supplements as well, okay, they're not there to treat a disease because we don't believe the current definition of diseases are accurate.
Right.
What we do is say, hey, we have a product. It's 100% vegan, high quality, high purity, and it will elevate blood plasmalogens, period. And then we run these clinical trials separately and independently to determine their effects. And then we have that information widely available for people. And that's how we keep things clean and separate and allow every person to have full control over their health.
Wonderful.
We're here to basically help that happen.
I have an off to the side question for you. 86% was a number that I read in your book about a colon health marker.
Yep.
And when people talk about the truth about disease, and once again, disease, that word is just too vague, really. And it's more symptomatic than actually talking about a specific thing. But reading about that 86%, I just wanted to say, what does that tell you that it's not 100%? Too many variables.
There's going to be your main driver. So that particular part is these gut microbiome metabolites called GTAs. People with deficient GTAs have a higher probability of getting disease. If you have healthy GTAs, you're protected from colon cancer. And like, so you can be 90 years old and you have the same risk as a regular 40-year-old. So it destroys the age-related association. This is that whole story about susceptibility versus triggers. So there's certain things that are high risk factors. But even if you have good normal levels, it's not the same in every person. So some person, a protective level might be higher. So for Alzheimer's, a good example. The protective level of plasmalogens for an E4 carrier is much higher than the protective level of plasmalogens in an E2 or E3 carrier. Mm. So plasmalogens are protective in all three genotypes. But based upon your genotype, if you're an E4, you need almost twice as much as an E2 or E3 to get the same level of protection because you're starting with an additional weakness. That's why everything adds up. And so you're right, diseases get complicated because there's more than one factor involved in everything. But fundamentally, 100% of diseases have a biochemical prodrome associated with it. And that's really why I'm doing what I'm doing. It's community medicine from my perspective. I spent a lot of years just discovering things, filing patents, writing papers. And it's like it's someone else's job to get it into the community and getting it used in a routine basis. And at some point in time, you have to wake up and say, well, you know what? It's not someone else's job anymore.
Right. Good job. Okay. Thank you.
It's my job now. I can't just continue to research these papers for self-gratification.
Right.
We have to kind of roll up our sleeves and actually get to work.
Absolutely. And I just want to tell you a couple times during the interview when you were talking about, well, we've known about this for 100 years. And I read this article one time, definitely within the last 5 years. It was talking about the demise of biology and how the poor biologists were going to be out of a job because chemistry was taking over. And it just cracked me up that the biological piece was getting lost in this world of research. And so it's just great to have you holding it up for the future.
Yeah, and it's just education and try to demystify this stuff. The logic that we apply to a healthy life, financial life, our relationships in our world, there are rules that the world organizes themselves around, okay? And your biochemistry is not foreign to that. And so if you have a deficiency, you can survive a deficiency for a certain period of time, but eventually it will catch up to you. The problem with health, there's a random fear, okay? You're walking down the street and you just don't know if you're going to get hit by lightning. So you're always living in this fear, some unknown affliction hitting you from left field, and you had no idea it was coming. Right. And it's like living your life paycheck to paycheck, not knowing if your transmission fails in your car, that you're not going to be able to fix your car and your rent payment on the same day type of thing. And that's how we live our health. We live with this constant cloud of fear that some unknown thing is going to come and grab us. And biochemistry allows us to say, look, we can't solve every single problem on Earth, but there's a lot of things that we can remove from that stress equation.
Right.
And you can say, okay, and I can sleep a bit better at night. Knowing, of course, that nothing is guaranteed in this world. A piano can still fall on your head when you walk out the front door.
Right, or your neighbor's fighting in that chair. You got to watch out.
Right, exactly. There's always going to be some sort of randomness in the world, but you want to just minimize that randomness. That's
yeah.
All. I'm interested in changing the epidemiology of these diseases. I want to see the actual population percentages of these diseases going down.
You know, there's a wonderful man, Dr. Cary Reams. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He was a way outsider from the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and then he died somewhere in there. And he started out as a soil chemist. He was in Florida, so he helped all these orange groves come back to life by putting good soil in the ground. And then one of the orchard owners came with her son, who was 4 years old, and said, the doctors tell me he's going to die because he's epileptic and they can't stop these seizures. And you helped the soil. Can you help my son? And so he went into his lab for 3 days and basically, I think he was one of the first people to ever use the hair for checking toxicity in the body and that sort of thing. And so he came up with a test using urine, and you test, you know, you use a refractometer to test the sugars and carbs, and then you use pH testing, and then a salt conductivity meter to do the salt, and then a viscosity, and then the undigested proteins, the nitrate nitrogens and the ammonia nitrogens, and then saliva pH. And just from that test, he made out sort of this balance of numbers that are perfect numbers and the score you kind of want, the numbers you want to try to gravitate to. And he gets into the ionic and the cationic of different calciums, and then the potency of minerals. And he was able to help so many people and the things that it shows from this. But I can relate so much to it because basically all it is like, okay, are you using more energy than you're putting in your body, or are you getting a good reserve going? And this really is the future of medicine, needless to say.
That's absolutely perfect. That's exactly what I do. That's what we do. It's biochemistry. The thing is, people also have to learn that your body's designed to work.
Right.
Okay? Like, your body is not designed to fail. It's actually designed to work. And it works flawlessly for about 60 years. You pretty well have to step in front of a bus to die for 60 years of your life. Okay, and you can do the most dumbass stuff to yourself for many, many years and get away with it. And so the body as designed is designed to work. And so people should not accept disease. They should demand health. Okay, like there's no reason we cannot be healthy. And part of the fight is to realize that, or to break that sense that disease is normal. Okay, that death is normal.
Right,
that
right.
Dysfunction is normal. Oh, that's just the way it is. That's just how it happens.
Right.
Well, no. Okay, actually, no. You're actually designed to work. We wouldn't accept this in anything else. Okay, like you wouldn't sit there and have your washing machine rattle for the whole life. You know, you're going to reach down, you're going to take the foot, and you're going to unwind the foot so the damn thing doesn't rattle. Your washing machine is not supposed to sit there and rattle all day long. It's supposed to be stable. It was built to do certain jobs. But for some reason, we're content in our human body just to let it run suboptimally. We tune our cars, we fix everything else in our lives. We have this concept of maintenance.
Right. And also, out of respect to most people, look what the average person is being fed every day via their Western medicine doctor and or the news. I mean, it's pathetic.
Which is why we had to break that barrier, because it is a challenge. The pharmaceutical system is powerful. The drugs do what they're told to do, right? So you can't say that statins don't lower cholesterol. They do lower cholesterol. Okay, but they don't ask the question of whether or not that's a good thing or not, right?
Right, or what else is it doing to your liver?
Correct, right? So it's a funny thing because each of these drugs are designed by smart people. They actually do what the designer wanted the drug to do, but we're not asking the right questions. Is that actually a good thing or not? That's the tricky part. And so it's a very seductive program.
Yeah.
And so it's a challenge.
A man with a passion, Dr. Dayan Goodenow, author of Breaking Alzheimer's. For anything tributaries related, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Our podcasts are on the usual platforms. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.